This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
BetOnline is your number one source for all sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right up to all the top fights in UFC and MMA and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the game's being played. When the game's over, head to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get on the action. Use the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online. The game starts here.
July 14th with the 7th Annual Tigers Minor League Report MLB Draft Show, hosted by Chris Brown and Rogelio Castillo, with special guest Matt Broder of Woodward Sports and Locked On Tigers host Scott Bentley. Who will the Tigers draft at pick number 11? Will the Tigers pick cause further frustration on waiting for the future? Show will be starting at 7 o'clock and will be going live until 9:30. Tune in on the Tigers Minor League Report YouTube channel on Sunday, July 14th for all the draft coverage and more. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel today.
And that's right. Welcome to another episode of the Tigers Minor League Report podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I am Rogelio Castillo, and same as Chris Brown and Brandon Day. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. And you also can please subscribe to our YouTube channel and also to our Twitter. So we hit 16,000 followers. So I think we are, I think we should make it very clear what our next goal is, ladies and gentlemen. So I just want to show this, I think, to some people. It should be pretty obvious. I mean, if you really pay attention to us, it's when you see it, and I should have it queued up, and this is me not being queued up with it, but ladies and gentlemen, we all have goals in life. We have weight loss goals, like myself, or you know, we have work goals, whatever goals you have in life. I have a lot of goals, you know, like I have to hit certain things at work, and I also have certain things in mind. Oh, by the way, before I forget, we also want to thank, we have 3 new Patreon subscribers.
Oh, nice.
Thank you so much. Subscribe. We got some extra content coming out this week, including we're going to be revisiting one of the older drafts. We're also going to be talking some drafts too. We are also kind of revisiting our conversation we had with Scott Bentley with Lockdown Tigers, which gave me a couple ideas for some extra content. But ladies and gentlemen, this is our goal right here. It's simple. Right here, we're at 16K. We're just 300 away from following and surpassing the official Tiger, Detroit Tigers player development account.
Get them.
That is my goal. That is the ultimate mission. That is what I want to do. So that's your goal.
That's a good next goal.
So yeah, we're just I don't know exactly where we're at right now, but we're getting close. So there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, plenty to get to. We have the Tigers, Hell in LA series to talk about. We also have the Erie Seawolves, who continue to hit pretty well or continue to win well. And also, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought here. Oh, I'm not losing my, like, we have some draft talk to do as well, but I was going somewhere with this, and now I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, Jackson Job just being awesome at West Michigan. That's what it was. Okay. So, but let's start with the Tigers and the Angels series. They almost lost yesterday, but if it wasn't for Tyler Holton saving their ass, that was a brutal series all the way around. You got no hit by a guy with a AAA pedigree on Friday, or I'm sorry, was it Thursday? You pretty much got shut out by a guy, and they lost out of four. Now this road trip continues just to get worse. I mean, there's no relief in sight. They don't really have any easy games. They got Minnesota, who's been playing better band of ball lately, as we knew we expect this to happen. Minnesota started off the season slow, but they're slowly but surely finding their footing. And then you got to come home. You have Minnesota, then you have the Reds, okay, that's a little bit of a reprieve, a little bit, but then you end.
Should
and
be.
Then you're, yeah, it should be. But again, this is not, there's nothing granted with these team anymore. So,
yeah.
The highlight of the weekend maybe was Justin Hamill hitting an inside the Parker home run. I don't know, but where do you guys want to start?
Well, I mean, it's officially like, you know, the halfway point of the season, right? We crossed the halfway point. Things haven't been going well. I don't know how many consecutive series the Tigers have lost. It feels like probably like 8 out of 9. I think they took the White Sox series, but
six, I don't know, back to 6 of 7. Yeah.
6 of 7. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. We can harp on it all day long, but it's just a terribly inconsistent offense. And if one of their good pitchers happens to have a rough outing, there's very little recourse. The team seems to be able to, there's not a whole lot of comeback in them. The bullpen has continued to struggle, even in with that final game where Brisky had some issues, and then Miller was just a disaster. I think Scott Harris went into the season kind of trying to have it both ways, if you will. There was he put together a team that could theoretically compete if everything went right, while also trying to give some wiggle room to play younger players, right? Parker Meadows, mm-hmm. Colt Keith, calling up Winsel Perez, Justin Malloy. And then basically, not everything's gone wrong, obviously, but a lot of things have gone wrong, and they were not built to overcome that. And the comparison I keep making is not even world champions aren't built to overcome things going wrong, as the Tigers have the exact same record as the Texas Rangers somehow.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not giving Scott Harris a pass on that by any means, but in part of the reason things have gone wrong is because of the players he targeted, right? Like Mark Canna isn't producing because he's injured. He's also 35, right? Like, that's not a huge shock. Shelby Miller might be injured, not a huge shock. Maeda might be injured, not a huge shock. Like, a lot of the additions he made, not big surprise. So that's where I'm at. It's we're kind of continuing this charade that they're attempting to compete and wanting to, you know, play real competitive games, when in reality they're just kind of running out the clock until they can trade their few assets away and play some of the young guys some more.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we should be happy, right? I mean, they had the best first half record they've put up since 2016, guys, so I don't really know what all the hysteria is about. I hate to drop that on everybody, but that sums it up pretty well. They didn't want to try too hard. They wanted to leave themselves the flexibility to bring some of the kids up, and it didn't, you know, you didn't necessarily think like Mark Canna and, you know, Kenta Maeda and a few of the older guys being injured a bunch would be an issue. Like, it, to, you know, heading into the season, it was almost a feature because you'd get to bring some people up too. You know, the older players are, you know, I mean, both of those guys are less expensive than they could be because of their age, and you know you're not going to get that much time out of them, but they just don't have anything going on offensively. We all know this. Like, Colt Keith's been okay, but other than that, it's pretty much the Riley Green show with Kerry Carpenter out, and this is all feeling very deja vu. You know, they get to June, Kerry Carpenter's hurt, and they just go completely into the toilet. Like, they didn't lose 9 games in a row, but they might as well have just gotten it over with more quickly and got onto whatever's next. And then, yeah, going out to L.A. where it's like the ghost of prospects pass, and it's like Joe Adell and Willie Calhoun bombing on you. It's like, you know, You know, not ideal. I mean, there are a few organizations in the game that I think are less, you know, kind of comprehensively competent than the Angels. And yet, you know, Ron Washington's out there now, and they've turned a few guys into useful pieces at least. And even with Mike Trout out there, they're not a complete disaster. They're not really notably better than us either. But we're all in the middle, and being in the middle sucks. You know, the whole system is set up to turn a rebuilding team around in, you know, 4, maybe 5 years and get to this point. And then it's like, okay, now you make your push, and the Tigers didn't make any push. The Tigers are just falling on their face. So it's been a rough go, and it's just, you know, it's downright hysteria in the fan base. And I don't really blame anybody. You know, it's just that, you know, the same person will tell you we need to trade Tarik Skubal because we've got to start from scratch and build this thing up the right way. And then on the other hand, they'll tell you that we can't develop anyone and that our farm system is garbage and that prospects never work out. And it's like, you know, there's just sort of nowhere to go. And, you know, I don't blame people for just being like, you know, kind of over it and whatever. Not at all. But, you know, I mean, one way or the other, Scott Harris has to pick a direction. And I have to think, you know, the next month is going to be, you know, the first, like, if there's a big month or a big moment for Scott Harris, it's this next month. Like, they got to have a good draft. They need to get what they need to get for Jack Flaherty, and they probably need to buy and sell. Because if they're not buying anything, if they're not going to solve the shortstop problem and, like, you know, whatever, go trade for Bo Bichette or, you know, wait till the offseason and sign Paul DeJong or Ha-Seong Kim would be nice. Probably that's, you know, too rich for our blood. Then you could probably punt the whole thing. Because I really think if people are telling themselves we need to trade Tarik Skubal, then you should probably trade Riley Green. You should probably trade Kerry Carpenter. You need to rip this thing down to the studs again, because you're not going to sign Kerry Carpenter, or you're not going to sign Riley Green to a long-term extension after you traded Tarik Skubal, and it looks like you're punting on this thing. No one's going to want to be here. You know, the one thing a small market team or, you know, a small to medium market team has to do is win to keep your guys. You know, no one wants to just like hang around here and, you know, give us a discount and just, you know, play out their career here if they don't have any faith in it. And if you're, you know, if you're trading Tarik Skubal and some of these guys, then yeah, we're looking at like 2028, 2029, and you can pretty much count me out.
Well, and
I'm not sticking around that long. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I don't really, you know. But oh, by the way, thank you so much, OBK. And Chris calling, that was some fun video there to do. That was literally, my pitching chart. And I'll show you guys that in a second.
Yeah, you know, apologies to people that I'm sure that annoyed some people, but that was, you know, the way we had it working. I had the gun and recording on my phone, and Raj was writing down the pitches, and so you just hear me keep saying, and then occasionally I cut up the video while we were there, and I let a couple times when I mentioned the spin rate because I thought people would dig that, but. Yeah, if you don't like it, just mute it, I guess.
I did like the actual photo of the notebook with the velocity. I was like, 99 98, okay, that's all I need to know, baby. He's
and
good
and
to go.
The one thing I was saying to a couple people in Discord is our gun is very, very nice, but there was also a guy there with a TrackMan iPad right in front of us, and the gun was consistently about a half a mile to a mile an hour slow compared to his iPad. So I don't know if Job actually hit 100. The highest we had was 98.9 on our gun.
I didn't see 100. No, I didn't see that.
So you may be able to round up to 100. Doesn't really matter. He was hitting 97 consistently. We can get into all that when we talk West Michigan, but it was fun to be out there.
Yeah. Now, and the one of the things that there's a couple of things that we kind of get to here. that there's a lot of things to unpack here. Deadly Ninjabies, first and foremost, he said, why can't Harris be honest with the fans? Because in all reality, to him, he doesn't owe it to you. To me, there's just a kind of like he's gonna sit there and say, wow, you know, I'm just as passionate. Like, he even said it, I'm passionate as you. But he's going to have that kind of arrogance to him. I mean, a lot of these guys do. They're just, you know, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, he's also not being honest to the players, right? You don't want to tell the players, like, hey, we're not trying to win. I mean, they probably, they're not dumb. They all kind of realize that at this point, but you don't want to, in before the midway point, to say, oh, we're cashing in our chips. You know, I remember the year, was it 2015, when the Tigers ended up selling at the deadline. And I remember a couple of the players, I want to say Ian Kinsler, was really upset that they didn't go out there and keep trying. These guys are super competitive. They think they can turn things around. You're not going to just tell them like, no, we don't believe in you. Even if that's the truth.
Ian Kinsler was not studying the farm system either. Yeah, you know, trade assets.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, you know, maybe this. That's one of the things we've been talking about is these players are very competitive and they're also full of testosterone. And yeah, so I like, you'd like it if he came out and said, here's our plan. We're going to compete in 2027. Like, I don't think many people would like it, but they would, I think some people would appreciate the honesty, but you can't do that as a GM or a president because, you know, you're going to lose your team. You're going to lose a bunch of fans.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think management wants them to tear it down. I don't really think they're going to be permitted to do that again. As sort of noxious as it's been to watch the Tigers spend like tens of million dollars on like a new video board and like, you know, these minor upgrades around the stadium and in their facilities and all this kind of stuff. They didn't spend all that money because they expected to just lose forever. You know, they were trying to position themselves to cash in even more when things turned around. There's a little bit of a debate there about the size of the market. Detroit is a small market when they're losing, especially when they've been losing this long. You can become a medium-sized market if the Tigers are good. Everyone will come out. Like, the whole city will rally around
right.
you. But that's how Detroit is. It's you know, it's hot or cold, and baseball itself, just as a baseline level, is not the hot ticket. So,
no. I mean, and then you're getting Stan says, no matter what Harris says, he'll be ripped by 971. He isn't too far off when you get takes like this. This, I'm sorry, I love Jeff Rieger, but come the fuck on. Pardon my language. Come on. Really? I can't help myself. Sorry in advance. Wyatt Langford, cycle. Okay, fine. Wyatt Langford. All right, fine. Fair enough. Nick Castellanos, 4-for-5. We talked about fielding. But Derek Hill, who's on his third team since he left Detroit. Come on. Did they sign Matt Chapman? No, they didn't. Willie Castro has looked like a completely different hitter. Again, Isaac Paredes. He was trying to pull the ball here. The Tigers made the trade. Everybody, not one single person was, when they traded for Austin Meadows, was going, oh, man, we're going to really miss Isaac Paredes. Get out of here. Give me the receipts if you have someone like that. But don't come like just this, you know, John or what's it? Johnny Come Lately or Mr. Perspective here, like Mr. You know, Captain Hindsight. Get out of here.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Rieger's going to Rieger, and he's going to kind of drag you. I have to admit, I've had the instinct to drag people a little bit because this whole thing has been so freaking annoying the last couple of days, you know. I mean, if you want to, you can find all kinds of people out there with just, you know, absolutely horrific takes to fake argue with and make yourself look better. You know, I mean, I'm cherry picking the people who are, you know, with the Scooble and the, you know, the farm system's terrible. We can't develop people, but we should also trade Tark Scooble.
Like, Christian Hero's hitting 10 home runs in Salt Lake City. Picking.
But, but you know, there's just some like very, you know, confused, panic and upset arguments out there. That's all I'm saying.
Hi, Trevor.
What's up?
Trevor. I miss you, Trevor.
I want to say, like, here's the thing. There's a danger. This is part of the business, right, of talking about sports is you try to build narratives at times. A lot of them are not genuine. Yeah. I mean, Nick Castellanos is one of the worst players in baseball this year by war. He's also been gone forever. It's like, why not, you know, write about J.D. Martinez? Right.
Who also has no interest in coming to Detroit again. I guarantee you.
No, but so let's play. We'll play a narrative game, right? So let's talk about the game yesterday. So who got the first big hit in the game yesterday? Andy Ibañez led off with a triple, right? Scott Harris grabbed him off the waiver wire. And then who knocked him in? Mark Canna. Mark Canna got a sacrifice fly. Scott Harris got him in a trade. Who hit the inside the park home run? Oh, Justin Henry Molloy. It's a Scott Harris trade. Awesome. Good work, Scott Harris. And Carson Kelly, 3-run homer. Scott Harris did it again. Who got the last out of the game? Tyler Holton. Scott Harris. Every time. Like, you know,
nothing but bangers, baby.
Nothing but bangers. You can build a narrative any way you want. Not right. Anybody's going to do that. But, you know, let's just ignore people. Yeah. Believe your eyes. If you don't like it, that's fine. Listen to us. Listen to whoever you want to. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of people just out there trying to make noise.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you're right.
And people need to vent to some degree. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, why the best fodder of it all was watching the people on Reddit talk about Christian Hira, and then they're talking about, well, these hitter, the hitting development down. They're blaming Mike Hessman. They're blaming Mike Hessman for Christian Hira, who, if you looked at his numbers, advanced numbers in Toledo, didn't do anything. He's in the Pacific Coast League. What does that mean? Higher elevation. That's what that means. There's better numbers in the PCL. Like, knock it off. If he was wanting to be up here, he was going to appear.
Hesman couldn't fix Hira. Hesman can't fix Torkelson.
Yeah.
You probably can't, to be honest.
Yeah, Mike, yeah. He probably like can't. But just come, like, we just have to.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I have no problem with fans venting. And like you said, people need to vent. That's fine. When the media people do it, it comes off as very disingenuous. But
yeah.
I mean, there's a desire when it's going this bad for a certain type of personality. And I can be bent this way because I have a dark sense of humor and a dark side to, like, want to really wallow, you know? Like, what else can we dredge up to make this feel even worse than it is? You know, yeah. Keston Hira, like, whatever, guys.
Stan, I can answer. Stan has a question. He's always wondering if the analytics of sports talk radio is that they get more listeners if they're negative and if they're positive about a particular team. Here's the thing. Ratings? It depends. But for right now, this is the summer for a lot of these sports talk guys is dead season to them. The NBA is over. The NHL is over. You have that lull. You're now in the lull in July where football is just around the corner, but it hasn't started yet. So you're going to talk about your training camp narratives over and over again. You're going to beat that with a dead horse. Suddenly you're going to be talking about the All-Star game. I mean, you talk about the All-Star game for maybe 30 seconds. Ignore that because Tigers don't have any All-Stars. It's become predictable. I mean, I can literally tell you, I haven't listened to sports talk radio in a decade plus. I can tell you, people tell me all the time, they hear what we've said or whatever, or verbatim on there, and that's fine. I don't care. That's what you want to do. Cool. It just becomes predictable after a while. So, I mean, right now, let's see, you're going to get the, oh man, what are you going to do with the, we're going to put on the grill this week, 248. It's like, you know, that's what you're going to have. And so anger.
It's hot outside.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, Deadly Ninja B said it best. Anger brings engagement. And that's what it is. You're feeding off the anger, the frustration of the fans, and you're building up that narrative. Simple as that.
I think it's, depends on the sport, right? If the Lions are really bad, they're going to get listeners. If the Lions are really good, they're going to get a lot of listeners. If the Lions are mediocre, they're going to get a lot of listeners. It's the Lions. I think the Tigers, if they're very bad, I think people like to call in and complain. And if they're competitive to good, I think people like, if they're mediocre, I don't think there's a lot of engagement. So you kind of, you know, bring it to negative, right? But you can, like, you know, the Pistons are god awful, right? And I don't think anybody cares at all. Like, somebody could get on there and be angry, and it's apathy at this point with the Pistons. And you run the risk of going that way with the Tigers if they don't turn things around in the next year or two. Maybe it's already there for a lot of people, but I mean, there's a reason that people who yell and scream are on TV and on the radio, but
pure
negativity does it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think some degree of expectations is probably part of it too, right? Because,
right.
Well, at least one or two games a week, the Tigers look like they could be a competitive team. Like, if you're watching Tarik Skubal dominate everybody, or you're watching Reese Olsen have a good game and the Tigers put up four or five runs and, oh, the bullpen blew it, you can still tell yourself, like, this isn't that far away. But then there's the other three out of five games where they just look, you know, mediocre to an embarrassment. And, you know, that juxtaposition is just really frustrating. Baseball is weird like that. It's weird. You know, it would be weird if the Lions, like, won 42-0 and then lost 42-0, but in baseball, that's not, you know, that's just par for the course from on the day to day. So it's also weird to cover that way. And media members are, you know, and I mean, we're kind of media members. Like, I don't know, I'm like a junior club associate or something at this point. But you know, we get invested too. We get mad when there isn't something fun to write about. We get tired of covering this team, and you know, and that just feeds, you know, that just feeds into it too. Because there's all, you know, there's our fandom, and then there's also the, like, okay, now I have to write, like, you know, a 1500 word, you know, article on this or that on a Sunday night. And I don't even want to think about this team. You know, I want to get ready for work on Monday.
Yeah. There, by the way, I think Chris is getting right now. Alfonso with a single scores, Trey Cruz. And he's now up 3-2 against Akron. I'm actually probably thinking about going to that game tomorrow in Akron because it's close by and it's the only time I can really get to go to, especially this weekend where I might even go to that Jackson Job start Saturday too. So we'll see.
Friday. I think it's Friday, isn't it?
Is it Friday? Oh, sorry. Friday.
Wait,
yeah. I might.
Wait. Where he's starting in West Michigan again?
No. Erie.
No.
Oh, yeah. You're going to Erie. Sorry,
he would be in Akron.
Akron. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So
split series this week. Yeah.
Yeah. So I might go to two games in Akron this week, but here's the thing. And then I'll just end this. And once and for all, we'll get back to talking baseball. Thank you for listening. Just period. Like, honestly, like, it's, It's great. I love the dedicated fans, like OBK, Noah, YouTube user, Adam. There's a lot of people in here, of course, Larry, Stan, that I really appreciate. And that's what makes it worthwhile to me. Deadly Ninja Bees, it's doing this. And people just coming out saying, hey, guys, don't be the angry guy. Keeping things in perspective. And that's all you can ask for. And so there's enough here, baseball, to look at. There's so much analytics, so much things. And like since I've become a writer, that's all I've known is bad baseball. I mean, I've had the angles I like to write about the Negro Leagues and some of the Hispanic players, because no one else is doing it in this town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a pretty, you know why? Because that needs to be spoken about. And so, you know, that's what I love about baseball. I love this sport so much, it doesn't matter. You know, and I love the fact that the sickos remain.
Yeah. And you know, someone brought up in here, like, and criticism is well-deserved. Well, smart criticism is well-deserved, but, you know, most criticism that you hear is just, you know, just people in their emotions. And
right.
You know, that's perfectly natural, but, you know, it doesn't advance the conversation at all or point to anything, you know, that they can do. It just, you know, kind of perpetuates the spiral of being miserable.
So, yeah.
You know, it's all right. You know, people are going to criticize. People are going to throw stuff at the wall. You know, it's our job to, like, you know, be a little more thoughtful about it and not get completely caught up in the narratives, even though we're experiencing the same thing. It sucks.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit down and watch this team lose and, you know, look terrible and trying to figure out, like, how they're going to piece this thing together and what should they do with the trade deadline. This is, you know, this is 10 years I've been doing this, and it's pretty much sucked the whole time. Brad Ausmus, you drove me to this in 2014 with your bullpen management. That one series against the Blue Jays was when I switched over and stopped writing movie and music reviews and was just like, all right, I freaking had it. And here I am. Look what he's done to me. So.
Well, I mean, like the same thing. It's just, here we are. Like we covered, when I remember one of our first live broadcasts was during 2019 at Marco Rogers' house, and it was over seafood lobster. I remember what we had for dinner. Mm-hmm. More than what we had, like we talked about. I mean, Max Boltman was there this is when he was on the Tigers. This is how long we've been around. Well, this is when Max Boltman was a Tigers beat writer. But the matchup, by the way, tomorrow, I'm interested in this matchup quite a bit, because outside Tarik Skubal is Simeon Woods Richardson's pitching for Texas. And I really like the fact that he's kind of coming into his own a little bit as a starter. It's a guy who had a lot of prospect hype when he was with the Mets before then he got traded to the Jays. And Carson Rucker update. No, we don't have somebody was asking if we have a Carson.
Oh,
or do we have one, Chris?
I mean, he's out for the year with a shoulder injury. I don't know if there's going to be much of an update there until next year, unfortunately.
Chase Young is currently in Lakeland rehabbing, so you can expect him back in a week, maybe or less.
He grounded into a double play on the first pitch in his first at bat, and then made an error at third on the first ball that hit to him. And then I believe he walked in his next two plate appearances.
He walked twice. Yeah. And then he's out.
But Richardson, I don't know. He's been a really surprise addition for the Twins. He's surgery. Yeah, for as far as Rucker goes, I was looking this up real quick. He's going to have surgery. He's just out. I mean, there's no rehab. There's no news on rehab or anything like that. So,
yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that, because I outside of Tarik Skubal just being Tarik Skubal, I think it's a good story for. I mean, he's only 23. That's the thing that really strikes me, is like Richardson.
It does seem like he's been around forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now people keep mentioning there's Josh from Torquemile, I think is MLB Pipeline updated their top 100 just now tonight. And the biggest riser on their list is your Kevin McGonigal, up 30 plus spots into the 60s now.
Knew it.
McGonigal coming in at number 60.
And you still have,
farm system sucks. Stop it, you guys. They can't develop anyone.
Yeah.
They have Clark 10th, Job 11th, and Young 42nd, I believe. So that's four of the top 70 prospects. And who knows, maybe how Yuli will sneak there by the end of the year.
He might. Yeah. Guess who I have number one still?
In the system?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Jackson Job.
You're correct.
As do we, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, we do. And that's not going to change. That's not going to change.
I mean, if McGonigal goes out and starts hitting, like, you know, 460 foot bombs, and we're like, well, all right, wait a second.
Yeah, McGonigal, actually.
That's really the only concern, right? It's just that it's going to be, you know, probably 45 power. Yeah, yeah. That's really the only thing stopping him from being a, you know, straight to the top of the list blue chipper. But
passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yep.
Yeah, we had a... Kevin McGonigal is probably... whenever he gets up to West Michigan, it's probably one of those things where my itinerary is going to somehow... I wish I could have, like, a house out that way. So it's just... I mean, I feel bad telling Chris, like, I'm just going to be coming over a lot more because I'm not going to just, you know...
That's no, fine.
Stay in the pool house or something.
Give him a key.
I mean, I could stay out on that deck, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to be Captain Interjector, but you know, I just wanted to mention that Scott Harris in that podcast about a week ago, he said something. There was still some brave talk in there about how, like, okay, we're going to face, you know, the Indians, the Guardians, we're going to face the, you know, the Twins all through July. There's an opportunity to really change, you know, the narrative of the season coming up. And, you know, that probably doesn't help their cause after the last week has happened either, because they were still trying to, like, no, we're going to come back. This thing could still be competitive. And then, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, you hope that as a GM or a president that he's both hopeful and realistic, right? Like, he's been around baseball long enough to know that sometimes teams can come together and put together a win streak, but you also have been around long enough to know that this team ain't doing that. Like, there's just not enough bats. And again, like I said, you could plan for things going wrong, but when two of the things that go wrong are Torkelson being back in AAA and Kerry Carpenter being injured for half the season, I mean, that's, you know, two of your three big bats. That's going to be tough. And Jake Rogers has regressed kind of like the, you know, a lot of us, I think, expected.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the offense isn't there. So, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just they say that even as far as, like, if you're wondering if chances of Dylan Dingler or Jackson Jobe coming, or not Jack, well, Jackson Jobe would be nice too, but for the sake of Chase Young coming up too, I don't know. It's going to be. Some of the comments about that, we talked about that a little bit last week about him, you know, saying that the in terms of, like, even with Javi Baez coming back, what are you expecting out of that? There's nothing to, I don't know.
Yeah.
But Kerry
Carpenter is probably coming back fairly soon, I think you can say, which will obviously help a lot, but
that will help
only to some extent. Yeah.
Yeah. I will, you know, I know that yesterday when he left the game early a little bit, it was a cramp, thankfully. He didn't even want to get out of the game too. That was another thing. I mean, there were some things about Casey Mize to start yesterday that was pretty encouraging. And so again, there's some things, there's some storylines you can look at and go, okay, there's something to look out for. So I like this comment, simple and straight to the point. What's up, boys? These Tigers are tiresome. Hopefully we play decent tomorrow. That's all you can ask for. That's the best. You know, that's a good narrative. Wing goes dingo. I like that.
Tiresome is a good word for it. And I also think there's some combination of, like, the Tigers being tiresome. And also, like, if people go watch other teams, offense is down. I've watched a lot of other teams the last couple of weeks, and there's a lot of, like, very slow, boring games where there's, like, one inning where someone erupts, the starter either dominates or gets knocked out in the first inning. Now, you know, it's like the way things have played out this year all around the league is just kind of a weird brand of baseball so far. They need to juice the ball again, rejuice the ball. Get it together, Manfred.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was watching the Jays and Astros game earlier. That was kind of a snooze fest. I'm not gonna lie, I mean, it was a 3-1 game. The Astros won, but I don't know. I was watching in between work, and I expected a little more spunk, and I didn't get that. So I don't know. Yeah.
There's just still a kind of a lack of action. You know, the base running is picked up a little bit with the bases being bigger, but I don't know how you're going to get more balls in play. I just don't. And that's going to lead us to the Job versus Verlander conversation later on.
Yes. So yeah, stay tuned for that. So we're going to, you know, we're going to breeze through the farm system pretty quick. And we're going to have a Jackson Job versus Justin Verlander. We're going to do that probably the top of the hour. So we're going to probably do that in 30 minutes.
As prospects. Forget about everything you know about Justin Verlander. Yeah. Justin Verlander is a 22-year-old guy who was drafted number 2 overall last year. Having a nice season at high A, Lakeland. You know, he's kind of good. He seems good. Job seems good. Let's go from there. I'm just curious. It's a fun conversation.
Yeah, we have to do it, ladies and gentlemen. We have to do this because, A, it's also extra bonus content as well. And B, at the same time, it's a fun idea. One of the things we want to do for extra bonus content is go back and look at some draft classes. So, for example, one of my draft class that I particularly take fond of is the year I was born, which I'm not, you know, the pitcher that they drafted was a guy who ended up never, the only time I ever see him on TV, the only time he ever pitched in somewhat meaningful game was the Hall of Fame game in 1984. And so if you can guess that, yeah, you know, that's your trivia question of the night. Who pitched in the 1984 Hall of Fame game between the Tigers and the Braves in an exhibition game? The starting pitcher was I think he was the top 5 pick by the Tigers in 1980 in the year that he was drafted. Name that pitcher.
I feel bad that I am the least likely Tigers fan to know this answer, even being born in 74.
No idea.
Yeah, it's I mean, I want somebody out there. I know here's the reason why I respect our fans base so much. Is that we do have some people that are just really, really good at just knowing the most obscure Tigers. We have, when it comes to obscure Tigers, we are very good at that aspect of it. I don't understand it. I want to believe it. I just don't get it. But there's a point in time too. There's a period of 5 years where the Tigers blew, like just there was 4 or 5 pitchers they picked in the top five. In the first round draft, and they just could not get it right. Could not get it right whatsoever. So, but yeah, further ado, let's go into the minors. Pat Underwood. No, that's a good question. No, or a good answer. No, Matt Wheatland. Oh, that's a good name. No, I don't think anybody's gonna get
wrong.
This. Yeah, yeah, you're right. I got the other one too. I got the,
I'm gonna look at it to see.
All right, Pat Underwood. That's a good guess, though. Pat Underwood did 79? Pitch the major leagues. I was born at 79. Thanks.
No. I'm saying, was Pat Underwood 79?
Oh yes, I think, or 70, maybe 78. I want to say.
All right, I see this guy. I don't even recognize his name. So there you go.
Okay. All right. I was gonna say no one. I wouldn't expect anybody to get this one. If you get
frantically researching though right now.
Yeah, they're frantically researching. Yes, Belvin Burnside. Wow, that's a name. Billy Chappell.
No.
Okay, that one I know.
Yeah, that one I know.
Rick Leach was 79.
Rick Leach. Okay. Well, we get this. We'll get Toledo up. But there is a period of time where there's a couple of pitchers who just were absolute. The Tigers could not get it right. For the sake of time, I'm just gonna go ahead and find this real quick. Mm-hmm. And Chris, you want to kick off with Toledo while I find this?
Yeah, sure. So, the Mud Hens, they played a pretty bad Louisville team, and you can kind of see that by the pitching stats. I thought that the International League was like a full season league, but apparently they are doing this 2 halves as well, and the Mud Hens are off to a 3-3 start, which is better than what they were doing before, but. Yeah, you see there that Torkelson actually had a solid week in terms of the power. Although, you know, every time he did something, people were quick to point out, like, oh, that's a terrible pitch. That's not going to fly. Like, you know, and you do see 11 strikeouts, which is not ideal. kind of an average-ish OPS at WRC+. But, you know.
I'm having like a Pavlovian response to any Torkelson home run where I immediately look up the pitch speed. Yeah.
Yeah. No, same here. Although the last I checked, he was actually hitting really well against velocity now.
It's coming around, yeah.
But
but still the overall isn't great. And then, you know, Parker Meadows actually didn't, we didn't even talk about this. We have a kind of an odd week where all the teams are playing on Monday when they normally don't. They have Sunday off. And I don't know if that's just all-star break, midseason break, or what, however they're working it, but.
And they're all three and three split series where they play home and away. Yeah. It's kind of odd. I don't know why, because the all-star break is still like another series away after next week. So I thought, this had me thinking this was almost all-star week because of the, dang it.
It's it's a strange quirk of the season, but you know, Parker Meadows continues to play pretty well down there. I think Brandon pointed out that he's not hitting breaking balls, and that was picked up by a number of people. I think it was you, Brandon. It was somebody at Bless You Boys.
Me and Jerry both. Yeah. I think we've talked about that online. Yeah.
Not, you know, but he went down basically because he wasn't hitting fastballs, and he's hitting fastballs now. So, you know, one thing at a time, I guess.
I mean, you're probably not going to get it all. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, he's, the hit tool has always been the question with him, and you just need it to be 220 and not 0.095.
Yeah. You just can't have an obvious glaring weakness if possible.
And Justice Bigby had a solid week. Like, one of the things, you know, he's been kind of, there are a lot of the prospects have kind of taken a step back this year, and Bigby is one of them in terms of just not really producing power, but he does have a ton of doubles, which is kind of what his swing is built for. We were hoping he would take that next step with the home runs, you know, pull field, but that just doesn't seem to be his swing. And it's a really tough profile now, you know, if you're gonna be a corner only outfielder who hits like seven home runs and a bunch of doubles, that's not going to get you a long career in the big leagues, if at all. But, you know, give him props for a good week.
Yeah.
And Dingler had a solid week again. So, you know, 114 WRC plus in June, 831 OPS, that'll work. It's not lighting the world on fire, but we do expect to see him in the next month or two, I would think.
Yeah, they're probably going to trade one of the catchers, you'd assume, and call him up.
Yeah, I you know, Carson Kelly.
Carson's been pretty good, yeah.
He has been good. He's been a good, you know, he's a solid defender for sure, and he's been more consistent on offense than Jake Rogers, right? He's strikes out a lot less, walks more. The power is about the same. I think Rogers probably has more raw power, right? But he's not getting to it as much. So, I mean, I wouldn't hate it if they kept Carson Kelly, but then they'd have to re-sign him. And then you're trading Jake Rogers, or I don't know. But yeah, I think it's most likely that Carson Kelly is probably their second best trade chip. You could see like a Carson Kelly, Jason Foley package somewhere. Kind of the new version of the old Justin Wilson, Alex Avila trade package we saw a few years ago, where you help a team with two needs. But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. So, by the way, just because I couldn't find the video was on YouTube. Now it's not there anymore. The pitcher that was the starter in the 1984 Hall of Fame game that was played on August 13th, 1984, was a pitcher by the name of Ricky Barlow. Ricky Barlow was a Tigers pick. He was a right-handed pitched. It was pick number 17, 1981 draft. In the draft that we saw, Ron Darling, Mike Moore, future Tiger, Joe Carter, Dick Schofield, Kevin McReynolds. I mean, these guys all went ahead of him. This was a pretty memorable draft. I mean, yeah, it's, in terms of some of these names, you're John's former Tiger reliever and Blue Jay reliever, rest in peace, John Cerruti. But Ricky Barlow, there's a few handful of players who didn't make the major leagues. Ricky Barlow was one of them. yeah, he was a guy who the Tigers, he spent, I think almost, I want to say he was in the system from 81 to 87. And he just could never had just control issues all the time. But anyways, I just remember that I watched it on, it was on YouTube. Now the game's gone. But anyway, Ricky.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Barlow.
So. That's Barlow is a terrific name for a Tigers draft pick.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good. Oh, that, I like Andrew Scott's guess here, though. Jerry, you know, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, we should mention the pitching, right? After Ty Madden had the worst outing of his career, arguably, comes back with arguably the best. I don't understand it. I watched it. I looked for things that have changed, and I can't. I don't know. He's just had command. He does this 2-3 times a year. usually like his first start of the year, and then a couple more times where you go, oh, yep, there you go, mid-rotation starter. And then the rest of the season, it's like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So that was this week. And again, I said Louisville's roster, their lineup, not that strong. Manning did kind of the same thing, right? No-hitter, three walks, five strikeouts for five innings. Yeah, it's frustrating with those two. Herter looked pretty good, and then he came out and threw one pitch in his second outing. And we put the video up, and it was a nice play by Torkelson at first. Nice throw to Herter, who kind of slipped off the mound and got to first base, got the out. But I don't know exactly what happened, if he turned his ankle trying to get to first base or if the runner stepped on his ankle or whatever, but he couldn't pitch. But I don't think it's a long-term thing. I think he'll be back later this week.
Yeah, it kind of looked like it happened on the collision, but yeah, it's hard to say, but definitely not too serious. I was waiting for the Enigma cut. Yeah.
Gotcha. Return to innocence. Mm-hmm. That's what we're hoping from. But yeah, a couple decent bullpen performances this week from a few lefties. So you got Easton Lucas there and Andrew Magno, both pitching well. Lucas is on the 40 man. He came up for one day and went back down. We'll probably see him later this year.
Yep. Yeah, I saw Enigma, so it's just couldn't help it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt, talk about Ty Madden for a moment. Yeah, I went back and looked at the start, and nothing to me looked different, but I think also Louisville is horrible this year. You mentioned it earlier, Chris, and they do this when Cincinnati empties out their system, we see it's like almost 2 or 3 years, like clockwork, the bats are bad. And they're just a bunch of minor league veterans. So I don't get it. And same thing with her, like her with frustrating about Brian Hurdler is I think he was turning a corner in terms of maybe a guy that would get some time up next. I think he might have been kind of taking a look. So that's what's frustrating about that. And yeah. But it allows guys like Lyle Lockhart Jr. to get some more time. And I hope that he can continue to build off this too, but yeah.
Maybe he misses a start because they're cautious, but mm-hmm. he didn't. He should be fine, I think, pretty quickly.
He didn't look like it didn't look like a severe issue. He wasn't like limping noticeably or anything like that, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens later this week.
Yeah.
That was a terrible exercise on your part, YouTube user. I'm sorry that you had to do that exercise and he did a shortstop exercise. He said he added every player that played shortstop with the Tigers together, OPS plus, it was less than 100 when he did it. That's brutal, my friend.
That checks so out, brutal. Although I bet that's the case for most teams, especially if you're going back a ways.
Yeah. So the Erie Seawolves continue to win. They have been one of the hottest teams. They've won 9 out of the last 10, something along those lines. And, you know, Haiyu Lee is what I keep hearing about Haiyu Lee is he is a passionate teammate. Don't piss off Haiyu Lee because he'll crush you. But like, if it wasn't for Kenny Graham coming out there the other day when he almost got ejected, I think he could have killed somebody. Like, that's how the kind of temper like that.
Killed
that
man.
He killed man.
That was head, getting hit in the head twice too. Yeah. You know, like that'll set you off. I bet he's had enough of everybody's crap.
Yeah, pretty much. He's at that point where he's sick and tired of that. But congratulations to Garrett Burhan for Player of the Week. Garrett Burhan, gentlemen, I want to talk to you about with you guys about what you've seen in Garrett Burhan. To me, out of all the pitching prospects, he is quietly just going about having a really good year. And I think it's worth doing a deep dive to look at because it just seems like he wasn't a swing and miss kind of guy, but he's been getting more and more. He gets more confidence in Erie.
Yeah, he definitely is. Although it's kind of hilarious. It's just, you know, terribly appropriate that of course he walked 7 tonight somehow.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, I think he took a real step with his slider this year, or cutter, whatever you want to call it. It's a real swing and miss pitch for him now, but yeah, he went out there tonight and I thought he was going to get pulled several times, but still managed to go through 5 innings despite walking 7, which is wild. You don't normally see a walk total that high anywhere. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it still looks like a reliever to me just based on just the way it looks. I don't know. That's the best I can describe it. And then if he's going to be a reliever, he's probably need to throw a little harder, but yeah, he may be able to, but I don't know. I mean, he has been one of the more interesting guys to follow this year. So
If he gets there, it's probably like a Mason Engler kind of a situation, I would assume, right? Like sort of a 2 or 3 innings middle relief thing.
Yeah.
Which is probably what Kenta Maeda should be doing. But
Yeah, I mean, I tried to sneak Burhan, I think, in the back of my top 30 just because I thought that there's a potential big leaguer there. But yeah, I mean, I don't see like a, you know, I mean, maybe if everything goes right, he's a number 5 starter, but I don't see much more than that. So, but still, yeah, it's certainly worth celebrating his career high in strikeouts. And again, though, Harrisburg is another team with a pretty rough offense, as you can see by the pitching numbers there in Erie, because Erie didn't have a huge offensive week. At least no one single player did. It was just a really balanced offense. Everybody went like, you know, 5 for 20 or 6 for 25. It was like everybody on the team did that. And so they took 5 of 6.
And they didn't have Lee for quite a bit of it. I mean, he played a few games, but you know, came out and won. And yeah, so yeah, it was a good time for them all to start contributing. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, yeah. How you Lee is, because he was still on the concussion protocol or whatever, came back. It wasn't even like his fight, right? Like somebody, Brady Allen, got into like a shouting match with the catcher, where the catcher accused Brady Allen of like stealing signs. And then Hayu Lee, I think, struck out and then started jawing at the catcher later and eventually got ejected. And I think Gabe Alvarez got ejected too. But, and then he got suspended for, because I think it was his second ejection of the year. So yeah, may need to tone it down a little bit, but you do like that kind of fire.
Yeah, a little passion is good. Don't see too much of that. You know, does anyone think here that the Tigers would be better if AJ Hinch blew up and got mad in public as a performance piece?
I know a lot of fans think so. A lot of fans.
They do.
I showed a clip of that automatic third strike that got called against Wenzel Perez. And I said it was a bad call. And other people were like, yeah, but it's not by the rules. It was the right call. I think it's still, it was a terrible, like the umpire, I think, has some discretion. Even if he doesn't think so, like, if the pitcher's not looking at the batter, you might be able to get away with that. But a lot of people were like, most of the comments were like, and AJ Hinch did nothing. It's like, what?
He can't do anything.
he's one of those guys we talked about before. He doesn't like to lose control of the game, and he doesn't want to be in the locker room instead of on the bench. He feels like he can affect the game. And so he doesn't go out there I don't know, 1 out of every 100 calls gets overturned because the manager goes out there and yells, maybe fewer than that. So I think he just doesn't view it as a great spending of his time.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely of the, like, you can yell at them once or twice a year and any more than that, and they're just going to tune you out kind of a guy. And yeah, I mean, some of these things, like, it just doesn't matter. And you don't see it as much anymore either. I think something people forget about that is that, you know, we didn't used to have replay. There used to be a lot of arguments that you could actually have, you know, I mean, most of these things are just not, there's no recourse. You can go out and kick and scream. I was sitting literally second row when Brad Ausmus had his one little tantrum and like ripped off his sweatshirt and stomped it on the ground. And that was hilarious. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it had no impact on anything ever.
No, and it never does. And not to mention, I think even with the advent of social media too, you get under a different type of microscope, because then if the video goes out, then you have some jackass out there also making commentary. And of course, none of these guys are going to look at, you know, Twitter all the time or anything like that either. But just, you know, it might be one of those things where they end up on ESPN, or it just might get out of hand. It's just you're part of a bigger folly.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Cash, Bob Melvin, even Bruce Bochy, these guys don't flip out. I mean, they're all pretty calm. They might bark a little bit from the dugout, but you just don't see that anymore. You know, I just think that must be kind of old school fans coming in, like, why doesn't he give that ump some crap? You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only other thing I wanted to mention about Erie is that Gabe Alvarez is going to the Futures game as a third base coach. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, well deserved.
Very cool. Yeah. Assuming he wants to do that, assuming like he doesn't, you know, it's probably a little bit of a break from, like, you never know when you'd be like, oh man, I got to fly to Texas. But I'm sure it's considered an honor for him, right? You know, they won the title last year. Let him go.
And as a guy who does, I assume, and at least should have managerial aspirations, you might as well be out there doing the meet and greet, you know, being out there as you know, a coach getting honored and all that. You know, he's done great work with the Seawolves. So yeah, as a career move, it's probably smart. Did either of you guys watch Wilkill much last week? I didn't really see any of his outings.
I watched his first start.
Okay.
I feel bad. I've saw, I must have seen him 15 times at West Michigan over the years, and it just became background noise, and I haven't been paying attention to him.
Same here.
He's always had a good arm, right? Like, it's a mid-90s fastball with some sink at times, and like, he'll occasionally show you a decent breaking ball and a decent changeup. I just never thought there was, like, enough there to pay a lot of attention to him as a pro prospect or as a big league prospect, but, you know, it's hard to discount what he's been doing for Erie this year. He's been really consistent.
Yeah, I thought he might become a reliever, and then that dream died, but he's still kind of starting to creep back into at least possible reliever territory, maybe, although he is, he's almost 25 now, so I don't know. Running out of time, probably.
The velocity's been consistent. I mean, there's one thing I remember when he was popping 97, 98, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah. He blew his arm out.
Yeah, blew his arm out. So the control, I will say his command is a lot better, and he's been able to... there's times where he is able to command the inside part of the plate better, but I don't know. I like what I've seen of him so far, so it's just nice to have at least that wild card, or that was a scratch, was he a scratch off ticket essentially, right, from the Angels deal? Is that what it was?
Yeah, was it Upton?
I think that was Upton.
Kinsler? Yeah,
it was either Upton or Kinsler. One of them was Elvin Rodriguez, and the other one was Wilhel Hernandez. And yeah, that was I don't know. It's been so long.
A long time.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to West Michigan and the funky. We always talk about how everything's so funky in Lansing. They won. They took advantage of a Lansing team who has a couple guys. One of the right fielder, I believe, got called up, right, Chris? Yep.
Henry Bolte, yeah. He hit a triple about 2 feet away from being a home run off Job, and they're like, well, that's all we need to see, up to Double A. he's a really talented five-tool type kid, so that was cool for him. But it's always an offensive explosion in Lansing for whatever reason. I don't know if it's the gigantic batter's eye, if it's the kind of sunken field, so if you get the ball in the air, it just flies because it's like the wind is howling down the Lansing streets. But it's you're usually in for some fireworks there.
Yeah,
especially because during the first inning of the Jackson Job start, some sloppy play by Bennett Lee. Those runs, at first they marked them as earned, and then they changed it to unearned. Correct?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he struck out. That was what the interesting thing about that start was, at least in the first inning, we didn't think that Job was going to make it out because he was at like 20 pitches with nobody out.
Yeah.
Because the first hitter, I want to say, took him to like 10 pitches, 9 or 10 pitches, and then finally struck out on
11 pitches.
11 pitches. Finally struck out on a breaking ball, and then Bennett Lee threw the ball away, so he got all the way to third, and then that was the Bolte triple. And then, they brought the infield in, or he got a strikeout, I think, and they brought the infield in, and we put that clip of Jim Jarvis making a nice diving stop and throwing home, and he was just missed the runner. So that cost Job some more pitches. And
umpire sucked. I'm sorry. Yeah. That guy sucked. He had a really weird strike zone.
But then he was able to, I think they came out and they're like, all right, this is going to be it. And then he rolled up a double play, immediately. There was a feel, and I think Brandon may have commented on this, though. He was just trying to get his work in. He wasn't necessarily attacking hitters or, game planning. He was just out there throw it, and he was like, all right, I gotta get out of this inning, I'll just roll up a double play immediately, and he did. And then
otherwise he wanted to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, and then the rest of the outing was just pretty typical Job. He gave up one other hard hit, and then Patrick Lee showed off what is I would say an easy plus arm. He showed it a couple times in that game and threw out the guy at second base, and then it was quick out. I think we mentioned he threw a lot of cutters, more than I'm used to seeing him throw. And I don't know if that was just something he wanted to work on, but I would say, 60 pitches, I would say 12 to 15 of them were cutters, which is probably double what he would normally throw.
I thought he was throwing a curve. I would have sworn he was throwing a curve on righties. The reason why I thought it was a curve was based off the kind of the north to south action. It wasn't, I know you can have sliders to have some, usually sliders are east to west and you can tell very distinctively, but it was it had a quick downward movement to it. It looked like a curve on a righty. I don't know, Chris.
I think, when he came into pro ball, I think he did have a distinct curve and a distinct slider. I don't know. It was tough to tell. It was a breaking ball with 3,200 plus RPM just about every time. And it was fun to watch. But the triple that Bolte hit was on the slider or curve or whatever that just went right over the heart of the plate, which is one of the things we've talked about before with him, with Montero, with other people who have that super high spin breaking ball. It's not always easy to command with pinpoint accuracy. You just kind of throw it and hope.
And you have to get it up. I mean, you have to throw it like at the top of the zone. And if it doesn't break, you pop it a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. It's a problem because it's going to break so much. It's still Jacksonville, though. And he looked like he felt how I felt, which is like, get him out of there. Can you get him to here?
No, and then we thought he might be done after three innings, and he went out in the fourth, and it was very quick. And yeah, he looked good, and he's off to Erie, where he should be for a couple starts, and then maybe off to Toledo or Detroit.
See how far you can stretch the 35 hitters without allowing a hit streak.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Restart this weekend, yeah.
And then, you know, I went out there three times this week because Lansing is the closest stadium to my house. It's about 45 minutes away here. So I went out and I wanted to see Carlos Marcano just to get a look at him. And it was fine. It wasn't anything special. He was, you know, 91, 93. He had flashed a fringy breaking ball and showed an okay changeup at times. But I think he only pitched three innings. And then I also went out for the Jaden Hamm start, which was kind of odd because he also looked like he was going to be done very early. He just did not have any kind of command. He was missing horizontally most of the time. And I think that's where he struggles, just because of that arm slot. And I think his pitches generally, it's hard for him to command the corners, I guess, east and west. So five walks in that start, I think four in the previous outing. So he has more walks in his last two starts than he had in his first 13, I think I put there. So yeah. I don't know if it's a concern long-term, although you do kind of wonder sometimes with guys with that arm slot. They can lose it at times. So, but otherwise, like, the stuff was pretty damn good still. It was, his fastball was down a little bit. I want to say it was like 91, 93 for the whole outing, at least on our gun. But again, he doesn't really need all that velocity when he's throwing it right.
Yep. And first full year. And there are probably a lot of guys starting to run out of gas as we get into the early July months here. There's probably some people who need a break, you know? So it just feels like the results are getting more and more erratic every week, where there's like someone walks eight, whether it's us or them, you know, there's a blowout, there's a bunch of close games, there's a game that's basically decided by one team walking people in, then you see a dominant start, you know, I mean, it's always kind of like that, but it just feels like the extremes have been accentuated the last couple weeks in particular.
And I do believe that was Ham's longest outing of his career, actually. And I was, like I said, I thought he was going to be out early, and then he goes out and pitches six innings, which I don't think he's done before. So there's something there. They're letting guys go a little bit longer now.
Yeah, the leash is starting to come off. And hopefully, I mean, what's frustrating right now is the promotions haven't started to happen yet. And you know, we're probably still 2 weeks away, but it's sort of like, feels like everything's just waiting on that, you know?
Well, I mean, we did get a couple. Patrick Lee went there one for 17. He didn't look overmatched to me. I think there was, just some BABIP luck, and maybe, you know, just adjusting to high A breaking balls. But he's still a dynamic player. When he gets on base, he causes a lot of havoc. I think it may have been the Jobe start we went to. I think he walked twice or got hit and walked and, you know, got over to third almost immediately. And he's not – it was one of the things I wanted to do was go out there and time him, because he always looks super fast. And I was like, hey, he's got to be like a 70 runner at least. And I timed him home to first four times, and I got 3-4-3s and 1-4-1-5. So I don't know. He's above average home to first, but I think he's definitely plus underway, and he's just really aggressive. So it'll be interesting to see what he does for that lineup going forward, if he can keep getting on base.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to play kind of a fun small ball style there with Stevenson and, you know, Johnson too, and Jarvis kind of spraying the ball all over the place and being able to run some too. That's kind of a fairly hellish testing ground for opposing catchers, probably.
Yeah, and I think Jarvis was the other player that we were kind of impressed with. Raj, I don't know what you thought.
I thought Jarvis. I also like the catcher Khan from.
Oh,
yeah, he had a really good arm too. I will say one thing about Jim Jarvis is all his contact was loud. Defensively, he made that nice play, but overall, I think one of the big things that stood out to me too was his eye at the plate. Maybe I didn't notice it before Lakeland, but he really was able to work the counts in, and I thought that he took advantage of a real, like I said, inconsistent strike zone. But I thought Jarvis is a guy that kind of like, he has that, I hate to say it, stereotype, but like the baseball rat kind of thing. He's a scrappy guy, and some of those stereotypes are true, but that's what he is to me. And he's done a really good job of solidifying an infield too, that really had a lot of questions over the, they're just brutal. And they needed some sort of consistent offense. I mean, Pacheco's on the IL. Peyton Graham in the outfield. So it's been, he's been the most purest infielder they've had this year. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but it's true.
Yeah, Max Anderson had a pretty good week, but you know, it was really kind of like the first big spark of late for him. He hasn't really been doing a whole lot. So
yeah, and Max Anderson,
first baseman.
he doesn't have a ton of range, and he cannot throw accurately if he's on the move. It's if he's running while he's throwing, that ball's not getting first base. So
he
did have a good offense week. I don't want to, you know, completely clown on him, right? You know, had a 2-home run, 2-double game. That's pretty good.
Yep.
Let's move on to the Lakeland Fly Tigers and the Kevin McGonigal show continuing in Lakeland. And at this point too, when we talk about this, I think we talked about this earlier in the week, how McGonigal is not just like taking, instead of just swinging, he's been a lot more aggressive. Like, screw it. I know what to expect at the plate now, and I'm just going to keep swinging and just, I feel like he's getting more aggressive at the plate because he realizes like it's just a matter of time. He's getting bored. He grows bored with this league.
Get me out of Florida summers. Please take me to the beautiful coast of Lake Michigan where I can bask in the dunes on my days off.
Yeah.
I mean, it still really is a controlled aggression though. Like we said, like he has no problem swinging at the first pitch, second pitch, third pitch if it's in the strike zone, but he will drag these at bats out. And you know, this is, they play tonight, so it's technically a game that we would talk about next week. but his hitting streak ended, and I, you know, who knows if he even knew about it. But I was kind of impressed because he was definitely in his last at bat and he didn't chase at all and took like an 8-pitch walk and got on base and continued the line. Like, we talk about this all the time that like he and Clark just kind of play winning brands of baseball.
Yeah.
He, you know, was not really chasing anything individually. And, you know, he is leading the Florida State League in hitting, but took his walk and kept the chain moving.
Yeah. They play situational baseball pretty well, especially for, you know, whatever you might think of Clark and his ego or something. He doesn't play that way. So. Mm-hmm.
And as far as the another pitcher that emerged is Gabriel Reyes. And Chris, is there any kind of background on this? Because this guy we haven't really heard too much about.
Well, I remember we were looking, we were talking about this the other day, that you know, feed we watched for the Phillies. They had, it was the Phillies Tigers, you know, extended spring game that was on. And we were trying to figure out who this pitcher was, number 12. He was a lefty. We're like, who is this? Yeah. And then I think he was injured for a while and came back a couple outings ago. And this is like the first time I really kind of dug into him. And yeah, he's a 20-year-old lefty with, it's like 91 to 93. He'll touch a 94, decent looking slider. He'll throw a changeup at times, has a sinker. And kind of a little bit like Rainer Castillo, I was just impressed with the number of strikes he was throwing. There's a lot of strikes until he kind of tired there at the end. As you can see, it was what, 3 3 2/3. But I don't know. I don't know if he's anything to write home about, but it's a relatively young guy who's throwing strikes with a couple interesting pitches. So I thought it was just a name to know.
And Rainer Castillo is out there tonight and just got all the ground balls. Yeah. Nothing but ground balls out there.
5 innings, 1 hit, I think.
Yeah.
No walks, 1 strikeout.
Just 1 strikeout. Yeah.
Yep. That's hilarious.
Heavy sinker. Correct. Yeah. That's his bread and butter there.
I'm going to have to pay more attention to Zach Lee and Jake. Paid some attention to Jake Miller, but both of them have pitched really well. I mean, they're probably just a little bit too advanced for that league at this point anyway, but both of them kind of interesting to me anyway. Miller kind of looks like kind of a low-powered Josh Hader to me, and I'm curious. He started ripping off a whole bunch of good breaking balls in a row, you know, and I was like, all right, we got something there, I think, maybe.
Briseño, Steve, is going to be out. There's still no word on when he's coming back. He's still been dealing with the knee, so that is unfortunate. But one guy I want to continue to take a look at, too, is Zach Lee. Zach Lee I've been trying to pay attention to a little bit as whenever he tries to get into the game. But Samuel Gill, it is unfortunate to see him kind of, I don't want to say, it seems like he's hit a slump a little bit.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, he's again, he's a 19-year-old and kind of doing what you would expect a 19-year-old. Like the 19-year-olds who aren't top prospects, right? Like, you know, Briseño is a 19-year-old and was hitting a lot, and Clark and McGonigal. But Samuel Hill is kind of the old-school Tigers international player who they just move up because they need somebody. And I don't know, he's holding his own. Like, he's never going to be a big power guy. And so,
yeah, maybe he'll grow into some power, and he probably has to. But
he had an RBI tonight, you know, single the opposite field, but I think he's just kind of a solid guy. Like, you know, you get comps to like Sergio Alcantara for him. So that's like, all right, well, keep the keep the ceiling low.
Yeah, Max Clark homered tonight. I guess
I played it a little earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting, there's an interesting quirk that I think Clark is like 1 for 35 against Dunedin this year for whatever reason, or like, it's just like a weird thing where he hasn't gotten hits against them. and it's not like they're like overpowering pitching. They had some better pitchers at the beginning of the year when they first played, but he came back tonight. He seems to like hitting home runs when they're on MILB TV, like the free game. He seems to know that. I wouldn't put it past him. So.
Yeah, special pair of shoes, dinger, mission accomplished. Okay, we go back to playing the regular band of baseball. Brett Callahan came back up.
Yeah,
had a little damage.
It was nice to have him back. He's another, like, as we talk about, to move somebody up, you got to move some other people down. But it would be nice to see Callahan and Jake Miller, and Clark and McGonigal all move up to West Michigan because they've all played well enough to do it. But just got to make room for him.
And there's not much blocking them, so.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, speaking of which, going the Florida Coast League and Complex League, I don't like Coast League. It's getting late. I'm getting a little but between the DSL 1 and DSL 2, seems like it was a quiet week overall.
I just didn't put, I as much as I'd like to put a bunch of stats in there, I don't think it matters that much. I just mentioned Jose Dixon because he was one of their bigger signings, and he's based on his frame in the scouting report and how he's performing, he seems like one of the more interesting young players to watch in the system. It's like 6'2", 160, playing shortstop.
Nice.
The power's not there yet, but with that frame, you'd like to think it could be. And, hitting, walking more than he's striking out. Like to see it.
Yep. Raking, stealing bases.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now it is time for... Oh. Yeah, it's time for... Yeah! How do you like that?
Beautiful.
Yeah. All right.
Want me to take this away?
Take it away.
Yeah, it's just something I brought up because I was telling someone, I don't know, in a certain sense, Jackson Jobe is a better pitching prospect than Justin Verlander was when he was 22. And they didn't want to hear that. And, by and large, I think it just came down to them not being able to eliminate everything that they know about Justin Verlander out of their heads. But it is really interesting to think about, what stuff they have, how you would grade them, and maybe even more about how things have changed. Because if you look at Justin Verlander in the Florida State League in 2005, no one could hit him. He wasn't striking guys out, but it's hard to hit home runs down there in the first place in the summer. You're at sea level. It's humid. You've got Justin Verlander throwing 98, 99, 100 miles per hour at you. And no one else is throwing 97, 98, 99, 100, at you in 2005. Mm-hmm. And that's why the thing is interesting, because Jackson Jobe has every bit as good a fastball as Justin Verlander did in 2005. His command might be not as sharp. He's not as durable. He doesn't have the proven durability. You can make those, all those points, weigh into where Jobe should be evaluated. But in terms of pure fastball, Jobe goes out there and throws 97, 98, 99, 100, and there's no 93, 94, cruising speed in the start. Of course, we can argue that a lot of Justin Verlander pitched deeper in games. But my point is just that Jackson Jobe's stuff, if you graded the two of them as 22-year-olds, you'd probably pick Jackson Jobe. It's just that it doesn't stand out as much now. Mm-hmm. Jackson Jobe will show you a bunch of hundreds, and everybody will be like, oh, yeah, Tarik Skubal can do that, and we've seen Foley do that, and all these other guys. Back then, Justin Verlander had a nasty curveball that he didn't really have control of, no real slider to speak of, a mediocre changeup. And he could just bully you because no one had seen that. You weren't seeing it. His fastball wasn't optimized. They were still telling him to two seam guys to try to get ground balls and all this goddamn nonsense. It would be very interesting to have 22-year-old Justin Verlander in the system now and see how they would develop him and how fast it would get to him being 2013 Justin Verlander. Because I think it might be a year or two. So the whole conversation to me is just a really interesting way of looking at how pitching development and the way we evaluate these guys has changed. But, you know, if Justin Verlander had an 80 fastball back then, Jackson Gill probably has an 80 or like a 75. If you want to, you know, if you want to give Skeens the Skeens and DeGrom the 80 fastball, it's a, probably a 75 fastball just based on, you know, just raw stuff and, you know, spin rate, the whole thing. He's got it. It's not always optimized to move, you know, the best way he would like it to. And that's just a part of developing his command. But I just think that's a, it's a super interesting conversation, and it takes you way back before StatCast and all these pitchers getting dialed in, you know, to the max extent. And I think there's a pretty good argument that Jackson Job, you know, is every bit the prospect that Justin Verlander was. He just doesn't have that college durability, you know, proven. He's got better secondary pitches, way better changeup. Maybe they're even in terms of control at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, I think it's a fun debate to have, and people just didn't want to have it. Didn't want to have it with me.
No, I think it is fun. I think you hit a lot of the main points there. I think absolutely Jackson Job, his stuff right now is more advanced. He's more comfortable throwing all of his pitches. His changeup is, I don't know if Verlander's ever had a changeup as good as Jackson Job's is right now. I mean, not to denigrate, you know, a Hall of Fame pitcher, right? But that was changeup was never Verlander's best pitch. He had it. But when he came up, I mean, he put together one of the great minor league pitching seasons of the last 20 years, honestly. But again, I think you nail it, because he was just an outlier at that point. What he was doing is commonplace now with the velocity and the you know, the hammer curve. But back then, and you can even look at it, you can go back and look at the velocity in 1996 or 2006 when Verlander was a rookie of the year with 6 strikeouts per 9, by the way. So basically the same strikeout and walk ratio as Nate Robertson. to let you know, like, how advanced the stuff, he was just a 2-pitch guy who they couldn't hit his pitches, and it took us like a decade to understand why. But
they hit everything in the air, you know, like in the Florida State League in particular, like it was just all lazy fly balls all day long.
So you can go look back, and there were 84 qualified pitchers in 2006. Three of them averaged a fastball over 94 miles an hour. Felix Hernandez at 95.2, Verlander at 95.1, and Josh Beckett at 94.7. The fourth hardest pitcher, Brad Penny, 93.9. That is the average big league fastball now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, I mean, you go back, I'll just click here. They're 84, so we'll stop at 41. Chris Benson was throwing 90.2. So that was the average fastball in 2006, 90.2. And now it's basically 4 miles an hour harder. So that's the difference, I think, is for as good as Jackson Job's stuff is now, it's just a little bit more common.
Yep. Yeah. Early optimization is common. Velocity is common. Yeah.
You have to mention, too, the biggest difference is in terms of development, too, as far as like even just that pitch was nice. Yeah. Sorry, I got distracted there. The biggest thing
that's the triple.
In 2005, too, another thing is players are stronger now than they were then. Think about that for a minute, because there's something that Baseball America was talking about the other day. They wrote an article about that looked like a curve to me. There was a debate, or they were just discussing factually how players have gotten stronger, and that plays into, I think, Jackson Job's level of competition a little bit. It's a little tougher than Verlander was, because I mean, if you think about, he spent 2 games in Erie, and then it was Detroit. I mean, that was it. He didn't have to stop in Toledo or anything like that. I know how the minors are down, quote unquote, in terms of just like overall sloppy play. And see, he was out and he was still safe. I don't understand that play. But either way, if we're going to look at level of competition too in the minors, I think
I forgot to cut that part out.
It's
a good thing we weren't swearing or saying anything bad about other players.
But Job has, I think has had a tougher challenge with that, but
these guys see velocity. Yeah. They all see this kind of velocity, at least somewhat. Yeah.
Yeah. Even to the point where they're seeing it in high school now. I mean, there's kids coming out of school throwing 96, 95 as a regular thing, versus you don't see it till you get to double A or high A. So,
yep. And you won't see Jackson Job throwing 92, 93.
No.
Working into games. Like, I'd love to see him try it. Like, fine, go ahead and try it. But you can't get away with that anymore. You know, that usually won't play. So, yeah, I mean, it's just such an all or nothing, you know, leave it all out there as long as you can and then go sit down kind of a paradigm now. So
You will see 92, 93 from Joe, but it's his cutter.
It's his cutter.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. You won't see a fastball below 96 usually.
It is interesting that they're emphasizing the cutter if, you know, because they told Flaherty to stop throwing it because it was impacting both of his four-seamer and his slider negatively. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, not that they're the same pitcher, different arm slot, you know, a bunch of things that are different, but it doesn't seem like he needs a cutter to me.
Well, I think it's, yeah, I mean, if you grade it on its own, it's fine. It's nothing special. It's his fourth pitch. But I think it's one of those things where he's got, you know, he's got 96 to 100. He's got 80 to 83 with the breaking ball. He's got 85, 86 with the changeup. They're like, well, just throw something in the middle. just something else, a little harder. And honestly, he uses a lot just as like a get me over fastball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, just a little different look if they're trying to square it up and ambush him. It's interesting. I don't, have you guys ever seen his grips? Cause I would be curious to know if he actually has a different slider and curveball grip, or if he's literally just, you know, just bending some more sideways than others, you know, like sweeping one here, you know, breaking it off more 12-6 here. Cause it's hard to tell. I mean, it is a very similar looking pitch, but it's almost just the way he throws it. You know,
he talked about grip. I think he talked about grip with Just Baseball. I remember him talking about this, the grip he has on it. I'm just trying to remember where
I feel like it was like something slight. Like he just like, yeah, he just like was like, no, I just, you know, I just turn, you know, or I just grip it a little bit more across the seam instead of like a straight four seam curveball grip. It wasn't real different. And he also didn't seem like super, like he just seems like they have a very natural feel to actually move the ball however he wants to, you know.
Yeah, I do have some he talked about it with Pitching Ninja. That's what it was.
Yeah, Pitching Ninja. Yeah, that's right.
So, and here, you know, I have the audio, so we can actually
right now.
I have the footage, so I why not? Because I mean, might as well give.
I've never had an elite producer before. This is awesome.
Well, that's what happens when. That's why, like, sometimes I'd rather take a step back and do that versus host, especially when running on like fumes, because today I've been working on slides all day. So here's Jack's. This is why you should donate, folks, because I'm a better producer than a marketer.
In everyone else's eyes, like, no, like, I'm not gonna go out there and throw 102 every single outing, because one, I think that'd be stupid, and two, like, it's not realistic. But yeah, like I see myself being able to reach back for triple digits whenever I need it, but we'll have to see. But yeah, then we got we'll go slider here. I kind of grip it like a lot of guys would grip their two seam. Nothing crazy, just right in between, and thumb here right in the middle between these laces, and then a little space in between the ball. And this is the grip that I've been throwing since I was 15 when I first started to throw. I call it a curveball at the time. And I was playing quarterback in high school, and my dad told me to throw like a football. So that's kind of how I started out, just throwing it like a football. And then as time went on, I just started, the biggest cue for me after that was just throw it hard, like throw it with the same hand speed as I do my fastball, and started doing that, started ripping it. And yeah, it's kind of now what it is today. That's like the one pitch that I haven't really like had to touch at all.
What? Yeah.
All right. There we go.
Yeah. It looks silly. It's a wiffle ball pitch when he's throwing it right. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's some good insight from them there. And then that's why they explains the curveball. Like we mentioned the curveball, because I was looking at the Ramos clip. Ramos had no chance on that too. No, YouTube user said, I watched or read something that the average MLB fastball is getting close to what is humanly possible. The technology, techniques, and physical condition, strength can't get much better. So it's reached its limitations, in other words. And then we also had another question about second, we talked about Haile Lee, our thoughts about Haile Lee. He's good. He's fiery. He's a red ass, and he could see some major league time. But
could be really good, too.
Yeah.
We're just not sure where he's going to play.
Yeah, that part we all agree with. But you know what? With YouTube's question, user, that's a really good question, because I like to think that there's guys throwing like 102, 104 now, and I just don't see it going. I think beyond that, it's just you're pulling your arm. I don't know.
It took a long time, like from Aroldis to like, Joan Duran and Ben Joyce now, and you know, and some of these dudes who are hitting 103, 104, Jordan Hicks, I'm pretty sure, did this kind of thing. It is hard to imagine it going too much further, but I also think baseball has a big talent acquisition problem, not just in the States, but like, you know, there's so many possible baseball players that never even get a look at baseball anymore. That I'm not sure I want to say that, because I still think there might be a time when you see like a whole ton of dudes throwing, you know, triple digits out of a bunch of bullpens. If they cast the nets wide enough. You know what my one like lame slick little idea would be if I happened to be a GM is that I would be absolutely stalking like every college player who goes undrafted, or you know, I would just be all over the corners, safeties, you know, like just get me all these athletes and see what these guys can do and just put them in camp, you know.
Bunch of Ronnie Lotts,
you know. Yeah, whatever it takes, you know.
Isn't that what the Royals did in the 70s? I feel like they did that. They went and just got a ton and ton of athletes, maybe in the 60s and 70s, and eventually turned into a bunch of really good players just by getting the best athletes they could.
Because they had the Royals Academy. They had their own, and it was something that was way ahead of their time, because I think the owner had some sort of like medical background to him. I can't remember exactly what it was, but they had.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a lot of those guys, the core guys that were part of those great Royals teams in the 70s, McRae, they had, I'm trying to think of
Frank White or
yeah, Frank
or...
White. Yeah. Frank. No, Frank White's a good one. Charlie Lebrandt, which was a pitcher. They just had really just turning out a bunch of these guys. And I'm just trying to remember how long the Royals Academy went for. I think it was during the expansion.
So it didn't have much to do with their 1986 fourth rounder.
A certain Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
To get to that you know, humanly possible throwing thing, I think we will continue to see the average velocity creep up a little bit every year. I think that as we see pitchers throw fewer innings and continue to throw it at, you know, maximum effort. And there were also, I think we will occasionally see, just as we saw with Verlander and Nolan Ryan, I talked a couple shows ago on the Motor City Metrics, there are going to be weird genetic freaks every now and then who, for whatever reason, have a super elastic UCL that never breaks, and it would be out there throwing like 106. And you're like, what the hell is going on? This is impossible.
And they're also getting so good at fixing it that they might just keep getting better at fixing it, and just no one's going to care anymore. You know, they're just going to just let it rip.
So
then, while it blows out, and then you just go get fixed and come back.
I just wanted to mention that I saw Kyle Boddy of Driveline fame talking about this, and he said that he thought that the next evolution would basically involve AI running millions and millions of simulations to find a way for humans to throw harder, and then testing it through that, and then eventually people, doing something like that. But he didn't think it would be like pitchers out there testing it on their cell. Like, we could see like a weird Fosbury flop delivery, you know, something completely different to throw harder. I don't know.
That makes me think there's going to be a Driveline IPO. You know, you got to mention AI if you're trying to sell stock out there, kids.
He's swears up and down about how AI is the the next big thing in player development, and people are falling behind if they don't use it. And it's one of those things where, like, I actually buy it from him. Like, I feel like he would find a way to use it.
I'm not arguing with Cal Boddy about player development.
I'm not big on AI for, you know, much else, but I could see that, you know, doing things in baseball for sure.
Yeah, I think we're a lot further away than some people would like to pretend we are, but yeah, I can totally see that happening eventually.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, I use AI for a lot of my stuff for work. It's made things a lot easier. But by the way, just so some more context to the, I wasn't too far off, the Kansas City Baseball or the Kansas City Royals Baseball Academy was an innovation by Ewing Kaufman, the franchise original owner. So goal was to develop quality players, quality athletes in the major league caliber players. So only three academy students who graduated were Ron Washington. So I wasn't too far. It was like URL Washington and Frank White. And the concept was in Sarasota, Florida, by the way. So essentially it was built in 1971. So it was only around for a short, very, very, very short period of time. And so what it was is that they were able to, that so they did each of the athletes selected for the 10-month course received a $5,000 scholarship and a monthly salary of $100 for the first 3 months, 150 for the next three, and 200 for the last four. They also got transportation to Sarasota, dormitory accommodations, three diet plan meals for a day, health and life insurance, emergency dental care, and a round trip plane ticket home for Christmas holiday, and all at all the team's expense. So the team paid for everything. This is a
screw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Attendance at the academy included an educational requirement in which each individual had to fulfill 12 credit hours at Manatee Junior College. The players took classes in the morning. Kaufman recommended the courses involve business and public relations out of concern for the players' financial well-being in the future. Expenses for books, room and board were paid by the Royals. Think about that for a second. Think about that for a moment. Imagine if that was still going on now. I think
minor leaguers had to fight to get all that, just like
minor leaguers had to get had an upgrade from a peanut butter sandwich just to get a decent meal.
Oh man.
But this was something that that is extraordinary.
That's a pretty cool story. Yeah. I did not know that. I mean, I knew there was some history of people trying to scout, football players. Obviously, a lot of baseball players were two-way athletes back, Willie Mays, Jackie Robinson, whoever you want. But
so yeah, I mean, what cool. was the, so how they did it too is they would the one of the guys in the Royals scouting department, they asked high school coaches from around the United States to recommend boys who were fine athletes regardless of sport and interested in attending the academy. So by when they opened that year, 7,682 young athletes between the ages of 16 and 21 attended the tryout camps in a range of 41 states. Of the 42 that were accepted in the first class, none were scouted by any of the major league ball clubs, and 8 had never played the sport at a high school level.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. They got 682 in the first round. That's pretty
7,007. So they had 7,682.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a ton of guys to bring in.
They tried out. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, imagine if that was still continuing. That's still to me essentially what it is what you see in soccer, these European teams do.
Yeah,
and they have the junior teams that play, and then you end up graduating, you end up going to the Premier League team.
They have tryouts all the time, you get into the system, and you're in their junior clubs and all that. Yeah, it's really different. It's a whole different structure.
And I think far fewer players fall through the cracks now, but you still see, I mean, Winton Bernard, I think, was a tryout camp signing, wasn't he, back in the day? And he eventually ended up making the big leagues, not with the Tigers, but with another team. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Lee, right? He comes from the Frontier League. He's still going out there fine there, but it's not the way it used to be where you can just go get these athletes who got nothing else to do. Sure, I'll try baseball.
Yeah,
it's also, again, as we talked about, they were probably throwing 88 in 1975, so it was easier for an athlete to pick up on that than 98.
Also true, but I also think I think there's a lot more athletes that are just never getting exposed to baseball now. But
yeah,
not internationally, but in the States, there's just certain parts of the country where it's becoming more of like golf or something, or hockey, where it's just super expensive. Not everyone's just going to get to go play because they were kind of interested. You're either all in or you're not, pretty early on. And the specialization starts that early too. So I don't know. I just feel like a lot of just general athletes never even get a look at baseball. Maybe I'm wrong.
Luke with a snipe. I like this.
Oh, got him.
Yeah. 7,782 is also the amount of money Chris Illich has spent in major league clubs since he took over. Hope you're doing well, guys.
Thank you, Luke. Didn't they just spend $3 million on a beautiful new video board for all of you?
Yeah,
I'm ungrateful.
All right,
$3 million on a beautiful new Gio Urshela.
On that note, who's gonna say if you have any last sound comments before we get out of here?
No, nothing but sarcasm, probably.
Yeah. it was a fun week on the farm. Mm-hmm. Not so much in the big league level. We'll see what happens over these next couple weeks. Still, really digging into the draft now.
Couple weeks are going to be really, really crucial from here to the deadline. Yep. This is probably going to be the crux of the season once again.
Yep.
So on that note, we're going to have plenty of draft coverage. We're going to have some extra bonus stuff on the Patreon. So that will be out later this week. And we got some articles busting out we're due to have that. So thank you so much for listening and watching. We appreciate it, and we'll be back on. So for anybody who listens to the Motor City Metrics podcast, we'll have it on Wednesday instead of Thursday, because Thursday's 4th. Happy 4th, by the way. Just be careful. There's some jackass out there that will probably the fireworks have already been starting here as early as sometimes like really early in the morning. So, but yeah, if you're not a Patreon subscriber, please do so. Also, our donation, our PayPal, you donate to PayPal, or if you have Venmo, there's other ways around it. So until Wednesday, we'll for until Wednesday, but for us, you guys will see us next week, and we'll be, I'm stuttering on the way out. I'm going to play a new ending.
It's late.
Yeah, it's getting late. We'll talk to you guys soon.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.